Welcome back. It's Tom Bell here. So excited to have you for another episode. And on today's show, we welcome Craig Richards, the CEO of Bicycle Network, all-round great guy. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Oh, thanks very much, Tom. And great to be with you, everyone.
Now, I'm excited to have you here. You know, you post motivational stuff on LinkedIn. That's how I came to be lucky enough to see you in my feed there. And for people that are only listening to this, on the wall behind Craig is a series of jerseys, Broncos, which is the local rugby league team, which I have supported since I was a little kid, sometimes for better and sometimes for worse. But then also other jerseys and other things that you're a part of. I mean, look, you know, you've really had a journey in your own life. But for people who haven't yet come across you, would you mind telling us a bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. Look, from my perspective, I mean, there's some things that are a bit more concrete, but what I really say, what I'm here to is my kind of personal philosophies around what I call better. Now, I believe that's why we're here. One, I'm here to try and make myself better at all times, but also to make the world better and also the people I get in contact with and I come across to try and help them be better as well. That's what I say my personal type philosophy is. Currently, I'm the leader of an amazing group of people at Bicycle Network. It's a for-purpose organisation, and what we believe is that the world will be better if people are physically active. So our job is to try and get people moving, and we do that through this wonderful old invention called the bicycle, which is one of the best ways that we know people need to get their physical activity every day. The bike's a great way to do that. I guess a little bit, people often say, well, how did you get to where you are and what happened? Well, I guess I'd say my sort of, you know, quick story in a nutshell is, I went to school, I wanted to be a sports person like everyone. Of course, I probably wasn't good enough. So then I went off and became a lawyer. I wasn't really sure what I was doing with that. So just because I, you know, wasn't very good with my hands, I couldn't be a tradesperson. I was no good with blood, so I couldn't be a doctor. I didn't know what to do. Became a lawyer. It was an okay job. I went into it thinking I had great notions of justice and fighting for freedom. Didn't really find that. And then luckily found my way into sport through an opportunity that came up. Got it to work in sport, and then for the past however long have also been working in what I call physical activity, which is kind of a recreation and sport crossover, where that we make sure we get people physically active because it means so much, not only for their enjoyment of life, but also for their own physical health.
Yeah, nice. Something I'd love and hate to see is you know, like maybe if you could have like the exercise bikes hooked up to your house and like maybe have like a Tesla battery or something. And if you do enough pedal miles, you know, that you actually are like powering the house, you know, a guy I know, John Lowy, you know, works for one of the banks that, you know, he'd probably power the neighborhood, but you know, is that like, that could be a cool thing. I don't know if that's an idea that anybody could ever actually like make happen, but yeah, I think I've seen something once on telly.
They do. I'll tell you one little part of it though. A few years ago, someone had one of those kind of trailers where they got people to ride bikes and you pedal away and then they'd store the energy. Mm. So a lot of us at work went down to in the city and had a ride on it. It was about 6 to 8 of us. Some of them are really good bike riders. I'm not that sort of level. We powered like crazy for 30 minutes, and at the end of it, we generated enough energy to boil a kettle.
So, gosh, okay.
I was like, yeah.
Unless Lance Armstrong is around.
This is the future, but it is a good way to think around what we do to make sure that we are efficient as humans, because it is so important for our planet to make sure we look after it as well. But yeah, humans powering energy by bikes, I think, unfortunately, that's not going to happen. We're better to rely on the sun and the wind and some of our other natural elements.
I like it. And so, you know, you have, like just looking through your LinkedIn and seeing the different titles that you've had, you know, and you look quite young, like, you know, so you've held some pretty impressive titles. To be CEO, like you're the top guy, and have had some other roles similar in the past. You know, what has it been like coming up? You know, you kind of take the dive away from the lawyer thing. It's not quite hitting the mark. It doesn't feel like it's an exact right fit. When you landed in that sports world, I guess, A, did it feel like, hey, this feels like a right fit? And then B, because of that, plus what ambition or whatever else you have, has that helped you to fuel up the ranks?
Look, I guess it's interesting, you know, when you say about fueling up the ranks, it's never been my thing and it doesn't really It's not what, you know, gets me out of bed in the morning to see, can you go up the ranks or something? It's interesting, you know, I've got a very wise career advisor who advises lots of people where I work. You know, he's a very, I think, you know, kind of a wise sage. And he says that there's sort of two sorts of careers. Some have a real linear career where they're saying, I want to get to this step and this step to this step to this step, you know, whether it's coordinator to manager to general manager, and others, which he described my career at, you kind of find the things that are interest you and you go from there to there, and it's not that linearly. And I certainly know, I think from the work sense, I've always gravitated to things that I believe in and are more interested in. And if that comes with, you know, a particular title or whatever, that's fine, but it really doesn't worry me. So, you know, in terms of where I go next, you know, like people say, well, how long did you know you wanted to be a CEO for? And I go, I never really thought about it. It was nothing in my mind. I didn't even really know what it was. Like, I can't imagine this person. Too many people saying, you know, I really want to have those three letters, because it's not really the point of it. You know, the point of it is saying you're working with a group of people, and yes, you're one of the leaders of a certain group of people trying to achieve something, but that's more important than for me. I certainly don't get too excited about the titles or any of that stuff.
Interesting. And like, I find it like, was it interesting though, when you became CEO, I guess as a board, and maybe you've got to answer questions for them, but to not have anybody else that you're sort of turning around and going, okay, well, what is, you know, what's this person above me think? Like, cause I spoke ultimately, like, that's such a huge part of any corporate life is, you know, making sure that you do what the people above you need. Is that the board for you, or like,
It is, but there's also, you've always got a boss, no matter who it is. Well, like, I had my own very small business once, which was really started off with just me in my front bedroom in my house, and at some stage it grew to three or four people. But still, you know, there I'd say wasn't just me doing whatever I wanted to do. I had to think carefully about it. I had to support my family. I had clients and all those sorts of things. At the moment, the organisation I work for is a member-based organisation. So we have almost 50,000 members, and they're who I consider ultimately I'm most answerable to, as well as answerable to anyone that's, you know, had any association with us. And for us, it's any person that's riding a bike. So yeah, you've always got people who, in effect, you're answerable to. I do have a board, which, of course, I am answerable to, you know, and sit above me. But, yeah, look, that thought that one day you'll be your own boss and you'll do whatever you want, I don't think it really quite works like that. You know,
might be a pipe dream.
Yeah, but you know, obviously you do have great freedom, so I am very lucky from that regard, in that I do have great autonomy. And we know that, you know, one of the things that motivates humans is having some autonomy, having some control over what you do. That's one of the really key things. And people that don't have that, it's much harder to be motivated. So, you know, I know one of the philosophies I certainly have from the work sense with people is we want them to be able to work out what to do. So we say to them, here's what we need you to do. You're going to have to work out a lot of the what. So, you know, how you go about it, you have to work some of that out yourself. So I kind of describe it as saying, you can't just go wherever you like. We're going to put a kind of a paddock around the things. But if you want people to get the most out of what they do and to love it the most, which I think is the way then to get the best out of them, you do have to give them quite a bit of freedom and enough rope. And this little phrase I like is, you want to give people enough rope to skip, but not enough to accidentally hang themselves.
Yeah, that's interesting, because like the SCARF model, learning about that a long time ago, but you know, you read some of the different things like certainty, autonomy, relatedness, like all those sorts of things, but you know, often autonomy isn't necessarily a thing, like, you, and that could largely be down to who your boss is or your own risk appetite. But if your boss, it wants to micromanage to make sure that everything's right to pass to their boss or before they send it out to the member or whatever, when that is taken away, it is very suffocating not to have autonomy. So it sounds very interesting that you've been able to set that up. You know, from your perspective, like, obviously you've done a fair bit of research into motivation. So I'd be interested to know, what else do you think motivates people from your perspective? And then after that, what is it that motivates you?
Yeah, look, you know, one of those motivational theories which I really liked was this guy called Daniel Pink, who really spoke about that mastery, autonomy and purpose, and that's the way to really motivate people. So for me, I know I'm pretty motivated by purpose. What I'm doing is really important to me. I want to make sure that what I'm doing has a really great outcome. And, you know, there the task can change, but it's the outcome to me that you're really aiming for. What are you striving to do that I think is really important? So I think those things are pretty important for that motivation, that mastery, the thought that we're just going to keep trying getting better and better at something. And that's what really means that humans do things that, you know, people always think, oh, they're motivated by money, and they're generally not. Like, you think everyone has something generally in their life that they just want to get better and better at, and it might be some skill. Like, you know, think of young people particularly who are trying to perfect something on a skateboard. They'll do it for hours and hours and hours just to get this, you know, whatever move they're doing, just a little bit better and a little bit better. And that's just how humans are motivated by mastery. So, yeah, I think that mastery, autonomy and purpose is a really good model. So I know in terms of trying to motivate people, I'm always trying to think, how are we going in that regard? Are we giving them, you know, tasks that they want to get better at? Are we giving them enough autonomy? And do they understand really what it's aiming for, rather than just saying, do this task? You know, where's the big picture? Where's it heading? You know, what at the end of the day will you be able to stick your hand on your heart and say, hey, I had some part in making this happen?
Mastery. I love, you know, my kids and I love to watch like bottle flips and trick shots. And so you can imagine how long it must take these people to be able to do them. But the kids always like, we'll just get lost for hours watching. If we ever sit in front of the telly together, watching people do all these trick shots and things. So you can certainly see that it not only is it fun to master things, it's also fun to watch people who are masters of things, which I suppose sports and all the different things, music, all the people that have become masters of things. There's something I think deep down that resonates to say, like, I actually really like what I see. And maybe there's that longing and respect. So longing, I want to do it. I want to master something myself, and respect of people who have actually been able to achieve those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so your purpose, right? So, you know, everything you're talking about is purposeful, even from the very start. Is there a time, if you travel back in your mind, where you weren't living on purpose? And then, you know, you came to realize, oh, hang on, like, it actually would be, it makes sense now to try to like drive my life by way of purpose. And if that was the case, how did you come to understand what it was? Was it by chance or by choice?
Yeah, it was interesting. It's like, I sort of went back when I said, I went back to the legal thing, and I just became a lawyer. I didn't know a lot about what I was doing, to be honest. And I ended up in commercial law firms. And there was times where I was just like everyone, just churning out your work, doing your thing, trying to get ahead. And then there came this moment where I thought, I don't want to be doing that when I'm 50, you know, like when I was 27 or something. And I looked at people who were 50 doing it, saying, I just don't think I can keep doing this thing, because what's the point of it? Yes, there's some clients who will be very happy with the outcome they've got. There's some who will be very unhappy with the outcome they got. But I didn't see the overall purpose to it. And even when I went into sport, I probably didn't think through it overly carefully. Like, part of me was like, yeah, I like sport. It's a good thing. It's good fun. People enjoy it. But the more I thought about it, you know, what I really actually liked about particularly working for the sporting teams was it gave people a sense of belonging. That's what I think it did most. It brought people together and gave them something to gravitate to. And in some ways, you know, in days gone by, they were probably more gravitated towards the church or religion or things like that, where, and, you know, we talk about, say, footy as a religion in many ways. But then when I thought a bit about that too, when I reached this moment when I was actually leaving Carlton Football Club, and I thought, what do I want to do next? And then when I did think about in terms of people who are spectators for elite sport, I went, they're actually pretty often a bit unhealthy and physically inactive. So that's why the bike thing really, when I kind of stumbled across it, it really suited me, because I was like, hey, this is really good, because I felt that for people it was giving them something really enjoyable, but also changing their own lives, improving their own health outcomes, both physical and mental as well.
The bike's cool. Like, I did triathlon, didn't really like the bike part of it. I used to hate swimming, but came to love swimming. And then running, like, my body just really can't handle the running anymore. But the bike is clever, because, you know, you get that, you get the period of time where you can coast. You're going to go a heck of a lot further on the bike, in my case anyway, than I would run somewhere, mainly because you a few pedals and you can glide for a bit. But it is one of those things that, you know, countries and different places where, you know, in the cities and different things, it makes sense to have the bikes. There's, I think, you know, the bikes you can pay with your card, it seems to have been overtaken by the powered scooters. I'm not seeing a lot of people on the bikes. Probably seeing more people on the powered scooter, which I wish they were a thing when I was a kid, the powered scooter, not from my weight perspective, but certainly just from the fun perspective. But so are you seeing that you're part of this member organization? Are you seeing that it's really having a positive effect on those members, and not only just from a joy perspective, but from a health perspective?
Yeah, we do, and not just our members, because really the good thing about members of the organisation I'm a part of, I call them selfless members, in that they say to us, yes, look after us. But really what we want you to do is go out and get more people to ride their bikes like we do. So that part, and we measure that by seeing how many people are actually riding their bikes. We see a lot in Australia from a leisure perspective, people doing it for leisure as the numbers are increasing significantly, but not as many from the commuting perspective, which is really where the biggest payoff is, because to get enough physical activity to improve your health outcomes, you've actually got to be physically active 5 times a week. And that's obviously quite a lot. Like, you know, think about people who play sport, and I've always been a, you know, weekend warrior sports person. You train once or twice a week, you play on the weekend, you still don't get enough physical activity. It's hard to build into your day. People go to the gym, not that many go 5 times a week. But if you just get on your bike to go where you need to go, then you're getting your physical activity incidentally, and that's what will make a big difference.
And do you feel like, I mean, I don't know if there's a vision that you have or the organization has or whatever else, that, because like if I've worked in banks, and I mean, no one would want me to turn up on after riding to work into the bank. There's no shower, there's nothing like that. You don't need me in a place where there's no windows and everything's locked down for theft reasons. Do you sort of see that, like, you know, there seems to be more bikeways, more bike paths? Like, there's a huge one here in North Brisbane, like an absolutely monster bike path, that we're moving away from that scary, like, you're on this skinny bit of the road and you might get hit by a car, to like bike paths and employers accommodating people to be able to turn up, have a shower and do those sorts of things. Do you think that's more prevalent now?
Yeah, it is. And that's certainly, and as you mentioned, there's a huge number of people, this group of people I call the interested but concerned. And it's like, it's about 70% of people who are interested in riding their bike, but they're concerned about vehicles. So they don't want to be dodging trucks, in effect. So that's why if you provide places for people to ride away from vehicles, more people will ride. But as you mentioned, other things matter as well. Good end-of-trip facilities. You're up in Brisbane, you know, in a Brisbane summer, if you ride to work 3 kilometres, you're going to be sweating. I'm down in Melbourne, you could probably go about 5 or 6 and you'll be fine. Get up to 15 and you'll probably be sweating. And as you say, if you're in close contact with other people, of course, keeping your physical distance these days, that's not a pleasant thing to do. So those end-of-trip facilities make a big difference as well.
Yeah. So from your perspective, do you have like a definition, or would there be a definition that you have for success?
Yeah, it is, because, and it's interesting, like, you know, when you asked me to do this, Tom, it did stump me a bit, because I actually thought I've probably actually never really sat down for a moment and thought, what is success? What does that really mean to me? Although I know that it's there. So I did have a think about it. And what I've come up with is I've come up with 3 things that I would measure success from my perspective. And the first one I really say is, at the end of the day, can you look yourself in the mirror and be proud of what you've done and the way you've gone about it? So in that regard, it's probably not as much about what you've done, but how you've done it. And that's what I say the most important thing is, no matter what you're doing, are you comfortable with the way you've gone about it? That's my first question I ask. And for me, that's what I define success as, not about reaching a certain level, achieving certain things. You know, there's plenty of people that will have done seemingly amazing things in terms of whether they've accumulated wealth or fame or followers or whatever it is, but if they've gone about it in a way that really they know in their heart they shouldn't be proud of, to me, I don't really think that's successful. So that's my number one. It's a bit of a moral one. The second one I say really is, have you made the most of the gifts you've been given? Because we should all define success slightly differently, because we know the reality is there's some people who have either been given incredible physical gifts, mental gifts, opportunities, you know, and I'd certainly regard someone as more successful who made the most of what they possibly got and squeezed every drop out of themselves than someone who had, you know, incredible gifts, achieved really good things, but nowhere near what they could have from their potential. So that's probably the second one. And the third one is one that I think you won't really know about till the final moment of your life comes. And that moment is, did you leave the world a better place than you found it? And that's that other one. You can assess it every day, like, have you done something to try and make the world better, or have you gone the other way? But that's the third question. So they're my 3 questions I say I know I've sort of asked myself over the years, but I probably haven't asked myself as directly as when you asked me to have a think about it. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I love that that's what came came about. It sounds like you are operating from a very powerful, centered place where a lot of your decisions are washing through purpose, these different lenses, but very, very rich character lenses. Like, am I acting with integrity? Am I doing the right things by others? Am I, going to be able to look back and see that, I actually did make a difference? Do you feel like that then filters a lot of things in your life? Like, not only is it sort of navigating you in a different way, are you kind of like saying no to different opportunities and no to other things for the fact that they don't fit that model or fit what you're looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, one of the other things I was thinking about, and I know you asked me the question is, what do you think's been most important for you? And to me, that's really the most important thing is, what are you prepared to say no to? That's probably the most thing I'd say that I probably think most about, as in, and sometimes those decisions can be slightly what I'd call, you might seem kind of pig-headed about it, but I know I'm pretty strong on that, what you'll say no to. It's interesting, one of the reflections I was having, you probably see, I do love cricket. I always played and I've always loved the team. And, I read a very interesting book recently called Steve Smith's Men. And it was about, all the trouble they got into with that terrible thing that happened to the cricket team when they made that terrible decision in South Africa to alter the ball, the condition of the ball. And it speaks a lot about the Australian cricket team. They have this lot, they say, we're prepared to go right up to the line about what's ethical, but we're not prepared to go across the line. And the book spoke a lot about this magical line. And to me, if you're going to go right up to the line, how do you really know where the line is? The line is not that clear. There's not some big, strip painted down the ground to say, oh, we can go this far and no further. And when I've seen a lot of people get themselves into ethical problems, they really haven't known where the line is. So I think reality is, we all know that there's sort of this fuzzy area in the middle. And if you're prepared to play around in there, you're probably going to get yourself in trouble at some point.
Yes, yes. Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. And, are you a person that reads a lot? Do you like reading biographies? Is it because you love sport and he's a character? I mean, like what he's achieved, it's a shame that thing happened because he was just on the up and up at that point. He still seems to be doing great things. But are you a person that reads a lot of books or what's that like for you?
Funnily enough, I never was. But my wife, who we've been married for quite a number of years, she's a real avid reader. And one of the things, I'm very thankful for, she's made me more of a reader. So for years, I was never a reader. And then I started reading sport books, and a lot of them are pretty boring. They're kind of like this chronicle of someone's career. This classic book will be, and then in 19 blah, 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 I did this, I got into this team, and it's just sort of this thing. But now I do tend to, I like reading novels now, which is good. It's a bit of escapism. Mm. But I also do like reading, like I mentioned that book before, books that have a bit more analysis and thought behind them as to why this happened, how it could have been prevented, what could you have done differently, what lessons have you learned. So those ones I do find more enjoyable now than just the sort of standard autobiography or biography that sort of chronicles someone's life. Because often I've found when I'm reading those is I kind of haven't learned a lot, because it's kind of this person has some extraordinary skill. And I've had an extraordinary skill, but I can't sort of explain where that is. So, I do. Mm. I probably read not a huge amount, 10 to 20 books a year, probably.
Still a pretty good effort.
Probably. Where, younger, I would be lucky to have read one.
And, is there a scoreboard at home? One side's your books that you've read, and then the other side is your, wife just, absolutely annihilating you with the amount? Is she well above the 10 to 20 a year?
She's on the Kindle. She's tried to get me into the Kindle, which I'm not as good at. I'm still a bit old-fashioned. I kind of like the feel of the paper. But, she annihilates me. If I read 20, she's reading 100.
Nice, I like it. But healthy competition there. And so in terms of your, success, the definition, absolutely magic, those 3 points there. Are there any other ingredients that you think, key ingredients for achieving the success that you have in your life?
Yeah, look, probably as we spoke about, to me that one was really saying what you're not prepared to do. That's probably the real key moment. We spoke a bit about that line, and this is an old line from a Midnight Oil song. I'm sure it probably didn't start there, but that thing which says that, that come from Peter Garrett, which says, you're better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
Mm.
I said that very poorly. But that's, you know, to me, that's the thing I'd say. You don't want to just live on your knees. You're better to die on your feet. So die in the ditch, work out what you're prepared to die in the ditch over and stick really hard to that, and then work out what your other things you're prepared to, you know, and fair enough, compromise on. Now, there's this other phrase which I like, that I can't remember who it comes from, but it says something like, in matter of principles, stand like a rock, but in matter of fashions, go with the stream.
Yeah, you've consumed and absorbed quite a lot of wisdom, you know, obviously, like, and it's all kind of like piled together. I guess we are all a version of that same absorption, but certainly your path, you know, it sees you like sharing so much gold. I'm absolutely loving that. From the perspective of, say, you know, I'm assuming that you've had hard times, or you have hard times from time to time, or hard mindsets, whatever else. Is there anything that you're kind of like telling yourself or doing during those harder times to sort of keep yourself going and get yourself back to, you know, a positive place?
Yeah, look, I guess the two things I say is, one, I say I'm pretty lucky. So one thing I say is, and at times we all, you know, it's all relative how we feel about certain things. But I do say, I think I've had a pretty lucky life, really. So, you know, I had a very stable upbringing. I think my parents instilled values in me. My dad drove me hard to make sure that I kept achieving. Mum taught me, I think, a lot about how we should treat other people. You know, I've had a long, wonderful relationship with my wife, who's shown great loyalty to me and great support. Also, I've got two daughters from my family perspective. So I think I've had a pretty lucky life, really. So the one thing I think about when, you know, you have those moments where you're a bit down, I just tell myself, come on, you just need to think about all the wonderful things you've had compared to what some others have had, you know, endured great hardships. Some of the hardships I hear people endure, I just think how they get through it is amazing. So that's one thing. And then, you know, the other part is probably, I think this comes from Finding Nemo, isn't it? Just keep swimming. You know, in the end, you've just got to keep going. You know, when you can have your moments, but you've just got to pick yourself up fast and get on with it.
Yeah, like you, even as you were talking before, and it just reminded me again now. I'm thinking his name's John Kudis, I think it's, or Coots or something. And he cruises around on like a skateboard because he hasn't got his legs, and he uses his hands to propel him around. And the success that he's achieved in his life, because it first sprung up when you were saying about, you know, make sure that you utilize the gifts that you have. But then, you know, there are people that are much worse off than you, at least differently abled, to a point where, you know, I remember seeing him live talk about how the kids in his school threw thumbtacks all around the ground. He didn't have the skateboard at that time. He had to walk around with gloves on his hands. So he'd end up, you know, like, what the, so, and yet he's a massive success. And so many stories where, you know, you can kind of like take I love that saying where it's like, if we all threw our problems in a pile, we would quickly take back our own problems almost all of the time, because when you actually see what everybody else is dealing with, what you're dealing with probably isn't as bad as you might have originally thought. You know, 700 million or something people in the world don't have access to clean drinking water. I mean, like, I could go to the tap and I could pour fresh water, or I can have a bottle of water, whatever it is. You know, maybe we just don't realize just how good we've got it. So that perspective shift is something that you seem to be quite good at.
Yeah, well, as I say, I just think in some ways I'm incredibly lucky. I haven't endured the hardships. You know, I wasn't born into privilege, but, I was born into what I call middle class Australia, and, you know, mum and dad made sure I got a good education and all those sorts of things. And I haven't had to endure the hardship from which others might have, whether it be from, you know, about particular their own characteristics of their life. I haven't had to endure any of that. So I do think I've been pretty lucky in some way. Well, in many ways.
Yeah. It's like life lotto, isn't it? Like you didn't, I mean, like, not that we know of, baby Craig didn't know where he was going to be born, right? So somehow you were born in this place. You could have been born in the Amazon, I don't know, or somewhere else, and then your parents and everything else. So you're right, like 400 trillion to 1 chance of turning up, let alone what's the odds then of actually turning up in your life in in that fertile place where you had loving parents and structure and guidance, you know, like it's humbling to even try to imagine what that number or figure could be, to sort of really make you happy to actually just have this life and to be breathing. If you're still breathing, then happy days, life is good. I think I heard a quote, it might have been on TikTok or something the other day, and it was that we really are 2 minutes away from death, and that our next breath is what just, you know, kickstarts the timer again. Because if you weren't able to breathe, well, then it would just be game over straight away. So, yeah, I like where your head's at with that sort of thing. And if you think back, you know, over all of the things that you've managed to do in your life, I mean, becoming a lawyer is just massive as well. Like that, like I know that wasn't for you, but to actually have gone, done it, stuck it through and actually done that successfully, that's massive. Like the places you've worked, all the things, is, and it might not even be your corporate thing, but is there something that you look back on that you're most proud of?
Look, it's interesting. Here's a weird one for you. I'm kind of most proud of once getting fired. And why that was it was somewhere I was working, and they asked me to do something which didn't sit well with my own moral compass, and so I said no, I'm not going to do it. Now 2 weeks later I was made redundant. Call it redundant, I know I was fired. That's the reality of it. But I was kind of, and while that, you know, at the time it hurt because it was kind of a pretty big kick in the pants for me, I was also, you know, when I look back on it, I know that was called almost this sort of sliding doors moment. Say yes, go on to a certain part in your career, which probably came with lots of, you know, privilege and wealth and all that sort of stuff, or say no and go down a different route. And I guess I'd say I'm pretty proud of the fact that I was able to resist the temptation and say, no, I'm not going to do it. I probably didn't fully understand what the consequence was going to be 2 weeks later, but you know, years back, as years go by, I look back on that and go, "Yeah, I'm actually kind of pretty proud of that," which is an interesting thing to say.
No, I absolutely love that, because it comes back again to being able to look in the mirror. Where do you think that comes from? Like, when did this start? Is it from childhood? Like you seem to want to be a good person, and like everybody should be a good person, but you know, I started reading the 48 Laws of Power, great book for everybody else, not for me. It's like you do this underhanded tactic to twist these people around or whatever. And that's probably like, you know, a terrible summation of the book. I couldn't even get through the first chapter of the thing. And I really like Robert Greene because I love his book Mastery, because I love mastery, the idea of it. For you to be such a good character and just to know and stand in the face of all sorts of things with the belief that you need to be able to look yourself in the mirror, and that being a core thing for you, and know that you did the right thing. Tell me a bit more about that. Like, do you remember where it came about, or how you're so strong with that?
Yeah, not really. I don't know. I imagine like everything, it just sort of gets formed through your experiences and views. Some of it's in you, some of it's what you see, and you know, some of it might be things you didn't do that you wished you had, you know, like I guess at times there's some moments I think about through life, like, geez, I wish I'd stood up then when I didn't, and feel, you know, kind of bad about it. You know, I think about some moments at school, for instance, like I know, you know, we all have those moments where people don't treat us well. And I think there's moments I stood up for myself, but I could have stood up for others, you know, as well. And I look back on that and go, oh yeah, I didn't really do the right thing there. Even though I know it would have come at a hell of a price, but I don't really know. I think it's just a summation of what happens over time, people you've met, what you think, you know, and you make some decisions about what you think is going to work best for you.
Yes, that's interesting. So you reflect a bit, because I feel like I reflect. I think back and I think of things that I've, you know, done, or like, you know, you can't change it because you learn from those things, but you know, and it's nothing major, but you know, you look at those things and it's like, maybe I was rude to someone, well, I could have just kept my mouth shut, or maybe I got angry that day, well, I didn't necessarily need to. You know, so it is an interesting one. I reflect on things, and I each time I try to then bring all of those learnings into the new moments, sometimes emotion, sometimes, you know, instant reactions, you know, see me not be the self that I'd like to be. But I like that idea of where they say that heaven or hell is you know, at the pearly gates or on your deathbed or wherever, where you see the person that you could have become, you know, versus the person that you are in heaven is seeing yourself, looking back at you in the mirror. And I guess, you know, we don't want to try to be perfect, but working towards that every day and putting things through the lenses like you do sounds like a really great way to get to the finish line, whenever that is, happy with how you had your at bat.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And as you say, it's always a work in progress. Like we're never complete. That comes back to this better theory that we could always do better, but all we can do is learn from it. Like, as you say, we can't go back and change it, but we can sort of say, hey, if faced with that again, what could we do that would be better? And, you know, you've got to try and get to know yourself, which I think is one of the other really important things, and know what you're comfortable with, what you're not comfortable with. And when you are going to be uncomfortable, that's okay too. We're going to do things we're uncomfortable with, provided I think they don't aren't something that's going to, as I say, upset or, you know, compromise what we believe is our core values.
A little left of question, this one, but if you were to go back, time machine, and you were to go back and you were to talk to 18, you can pick whatever age you want, but you were giving advice to that person, you know, young Craig. Is there anything that you would be whispering in young Craig's ear, or would you rather not go back and just leave everything the way it is?
No. I mean, look, there's always things you could whisper. And I guess, you know, I know someone gave me this advice as well just the other day, which is one of my lifelong learnings that, like a lot of things, you're still working at. And this is something interesting. What they said to me is, at times you're too quick to tell the emperor they're wearing no clothes. Right. And that's interesting because my dad used to say the same thing to me. He'd say, you call people out too quickly. And so I guess over the years I've tried to get better at being more subtle about the way I do that, but it's still a work in progress, and I probably could have started earlier on that journey, I think.
Interesting. You know, because that's, what is it, blind spots or something, where like we all have these blind spots about ourselves. Are you actively seeking out feedback from people? Do you have mentors that you're, you know, talking with or that are giving you feedback? Like, how is it that you're, and are you actively seeking to have feedback in that loop so that you can continue to be better?
Yeah, look, obviously there's a few people, a lot of people I, you know, work with every day. Some of you family, friends, those sorts of things. You know, you're always trying to find things that can help. And some are people who you've known for a long time, and some might be people that you only know for a short period of time, and you get a pearl of wisdom from them and go, oh, yeah, geez, that's a good point. I better have a think about that. And some you've got to discard. You know, that feedback's a real challenging thing, I think. There's some, you get a lot of it, and some can be very contradictory and it can spin your head a little bit. And in the end, you've got to sort it out and decide what I'm actually going to act on and what I'm not. And I kind of learned that lesson playing cricket years ago. You know, the funny cricket story was when I was young, I was trying to become a leg spinner in pre-Shane Warne days.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all these coaches. At one stage, I had 3 or 4 different coaches all telling me different things. And I tried to do what every one of them said to, you know. And in the end, it all just unraveled, became apart because it was almost contradictory. Instead of just saying, no, I've just got to stick to my own thing a little bit and say, yeah, thanks for your feedback and for your tips, your coaching tips, but I can't follow them all because it just scrambled my head completely. So I think I did learn that lesson at about 16 or 17.
I like it.
But it's still one that sits with you, you know, because some people take it very badly when they give you feedback, and if you decide not to take that up, because in the end it's up to you when you sift it out, you can pick the wrong one. Can happen.
Tom Bilyeu, I think, says something where it's like the criticism is often like a punch in the face or a hit in the face, but from a gold nugget. And once it hits you in the face, it lands at your feet. And if you're brave enough, you can pick up the gold nugget and examine it and work out, you know, is any of these things that I could you know, potentially move and incorporate into myself. And then, you know, so sometimes criticism or feedback is good, but like, I like what you started saying is, you know, maybe like the gold rush days, it's not all going to be gold. Run it through the sieve first and work out what you might want to keep and what you might not. So in terms of your, you know, people are sitting here listening to this, maybe they're successful, maybe they just wanted to achieve more success in their lives. Would you have any tips, you know, for them about going and achieving greater levels of success?
Yeah, I guess one is sort out your boundaries. That's what I think is important, which is we've spoken a little bit about. So it's important to sort out your boundaries and know what you're doing, what you won't. I think that's something, because otherwise you could have success in some of those, you know, outcome senses that might feel hollow in the end. So I think that's one, sort out your boundaries. I guess the other one is it's never over. Like, you know, this sort of, we can always just keep going, getting a bit better, trying a bit more. If something doesn't work, you know, you've just found a way that it to not succeed, try another way. You know, we don't want to just keep, you know, flogging a dead horse, but we want to just make sure, I think understanding is never over is another important one. And the most important one, which we probably touched on very early, was I think enjoy it. You got to find something you enjoy. That's the key. Like if you, I know, and I thought that from the legal sense when I looked at it, and I was went, it's okay, but I don't love it, and I don't think I can do it for this many years just doing something that is just kind of okay. Like I didn't hate it, but find something you really enjoy that you're really passionate about, and then when you do, particularly if it's, you know, if you're looking for that success from your work side, it won't seem like work. You know, that word work sounds very onerous and hard yards, and like you. And yeah, sure, we're going to have to do some things we don't like. That's just the reality, and, you know, shoulder to the wheel and all that sort of stuff. But try and find something you really enjoy. And even if it's so you're doing a, you know, a task that you don't really enjoy, but you're doing it for a purpose you really enjoy, I reckon that's a great thing to do as well.
So that's an interesting thing, the last point there of, you know, if there's a potential that you could shift your perspective somewhat so that you could tie it to purpose. I do this because of X, to get to X outcome, to help my family, to play sport on the weekend, and this job I'm doing pays for that, or I'm hanging with my mates at my job, whatever it might be. But then there's also the other side of that where it's like, it's really not a right fit for you. And it doesn't mean that you can just boop, press the button and eject seat out of that role. You might need to play carefully plan and arrive at where you should be. But I suppose then there's a knowing of like, well, what is it that you don't like about that job? What are the things that you don't like? And is there something else that you would like? And maybe start trying to explore those avenues so that you can get closer to a right fit.
Yeah, because you've got to find a way out. Like, you know, I say from my legal sense, when I was 26 or 7 and decided I didn't want to be a lawyer anymore, no one would give me a job. And they just said, that's it, you're a lawyer, that's what you do. So I had to find a way out, which actually involved going and doing a different legal area. And then in the end, that was sort of, I was trying to use that as a bridge to find my next career. And that didn't work either. So I had to start my own business. So In the end, enough's enough. I'm going to have to take the risk, start my own business to get somewhere I wanted to do. But so it can be hard. It might not just happen like that. You know, you might have to find a way, and it might take some time, and that's okay as well to get to where you want to get to.
And that's a real level of courage, isn't it? Like, you know, because the people at your work, the people that you're applying for, probably friends and family. I don't want to say anything about your friends and family, but people sort of see you in a place and it's like, but you're a successful lawyer now. Like, to be a lawyer, like, what? That's one of the most amazing things ever. But if it's not right for you, it's okay. But, you know, what did you think about, what are your thoughts about the whole courage piece to actually be willing to follow your own heart rather than what everybody wants to sort of put you in the box?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And it is very difficult for lots of people because they have these expectations that, and, you know, it often comes from a very good place. Like a lot of parents will have that for their own children where they've got this great expectation that they need to get to this certain exalted position supposedly. But if it doesn't suit them and they're not going to be happy, you know, that's just kind of, at the end of it, I'd be thinking, yeah, you've probably given them a good living and an outcome and those sorts of things, but they're not going to be very happy. So it's an interesting area, I think, that if you aren't happy with something, you know, particularly in our, as I say, it's easy for me to say because I've, you know, as I said, how lucky I'm, I've had the fortune to have more opportunities. I guess some places you just won't, some parts of life you just won't have that, you know, when you're just basically on the absolute survival situation, that's probably different. But, you know, as particularly in Australia, we do have lots of options and lots of choices, I think.
But you've also got to be open to them too, because, you know, had you been in that lower spot and then you just gone, even though I don't enjoy it, I've come too far now. Like your point, it's never too late. Like, oh, I've come too far. This is what I'm going to do now. I've spent the money, probably $50,000 on a degree or, more, right?
I do say, look, for me, I was pretty lucky in that I did my degrees in the 80s when education was free. One of the small regrets I have in life was when I finished university in 1988, that was when they brought in, you had to pay for your degrees. And I was leaving, so it's not my problem. But I look back on that now and think, geez, I could have maybe helped do something about that, because suddenly all, you know, other people after me, because education can do wonderful things for you, had to pay for it, where I didn't. My degrees cost me $200 a year to be a member of the union or something like, you know, the sort of university union, which I don't even really know what it was about, to be honest.
Mm.
So I was very lucky from that perspective. And then with the legal thing, I left before I had, you know, it's often called the golden handcuffs. I wasn't that well paid when I left, but, you know, if I had stayed another 4 or 5 years or made that decision, which I didn't make, and got paid a lot of money, that's when I've seen a lot of people just can't bring themselves to get out of it, because suddenly they've got, you know, their lifestyle from a financial perspective is adjusted up to something that they just can't work out how to get rid of. I fortunately didn't have that when I when my moment came. I was still a grunt rather than a highly paid person.
Well, Craig, you are a walking example of someone that, you know, has found your way through life, you know, your inner compass and the things that you're, you know, choosing to use to navigate your way through and say yes and say no to all the different things is absolutely inspiring. And, you know, I'm sure that other people would love to get involved or, you know, track your progress or those sorts of things. Are there some like websites or social media handles or any of those sorts of things that you'd like to share?
Well, not really. I don't really do a lot of social media. This is going to shock a lot of people. I've never done Facebook. I kind of have a Twitter account that's very work related. I do put the odd thing on LinkedIn from time to time, and I think it could help others. But I kind of, you know, probably don't think personally what I'm doing is that really interesting to people. But at times I put stuff on LinkedIn mainly because I think, you know, it could help some people and there could be some lessons in there that they might be able to use as well. So it's really only LinkedIn, the rest of it. I'm sorry.
No, and if anyone wanted to become a member of the Bicycle Network, is that a thing that people, you know, like they could get in the movement or?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're always looking for more members, the more you can do. So, yeah, if people want to join Bicycle Network, that's amazing. And if you don't, you just want to get riding your bike, that's wonderful too. But yeah, as a, you know, I just say to everyone, make sure that, you know, you think where you can about your life and find what suits you best. And knowing what suits you best, I think, is one of the greatest life's challenges, because we don't always find it easily. Some find it easily. Some takes a very long time to find what they think or what actually suits them best. But, just never give up and keep looking.
I love it. I love it. Craig, thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat.
No worries. Thanks so much, and I really appreciate it. Wonderful.
And for everybody listening for another episode, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Tom Bell, and I'm looking forward to catching you on the next episode.